Should we crack on?
Let's do it.
Yeah. So here we are with another international podcast, and I'm very, very happy to have Damani from bloody hell. I need to get my teeth. Literally, I was like,
shall we say it?
Yeah. So let's start again. Right, we ready?
Yeah. Stop banging the table.
It's completely throwing
me
now.
Calm down. Don't be nervous.
I'm not nervous. It's just you got me in a rush, and then bloody, I'm trying to crack on. So here we are, another international episode of the Trade Legends podcast. I'm very happy to be here with Damani from Diamondback Tool Belt. Welcome to the show. Thank you very much for giving up your time and coming on and having a little chat with us about the business. I followed you guys on social media. I see so many people, especially people that we work with via Unilite, which is my business other than Trade Legends. And I see loads of people using your gear. And the one thing that I always really, really admired was you're heavily involved on the social side yourself. So I see you all over there demoing the different products that you have. But I also see you sort of like trying to engage with the community. Now, one thing that I really sort of admire about certain brands is they really try to get involved with every tradesman and woman, regardless of whether or not they're trying to sell a product. And that's something that I really feel that you guys tap into like really, really well. So I wanted to get you on just to talk about yourself, how you came to be in Diamondback Tool, but how the whole thing came together, and sort of just talk us through the types of things that you do for anybody that's listening or watching that might not have heard about you, which, you know, where have they been for probably the last sort of few years?
Right.
Just explain to us a bit about the business, a bit about yourself and the types of things that you do over there.
Well, first of all, I don't know what slang terminology translates from here to across the pond and back and forth. I'm a big, like, I'm into UK culture, like English Premier League and stuff like that. I watch UK television, so I adopt a lot of slang. So I'm going to throw a term out there from my side, you know what I mean? So over here, when you're actually out in the community and you're actually doing work, we call it being outside. You know what I'm saying? So we're outside. Diamondback is outside. And a lot of these companies are not outside. They're stuck in their offices. They're behind closed doors. They're making decisions insulated from the people that they are or the communities that they're serving. But we're really outside. We're actually talking to the people face to face. We're going to the trade shows. I mean, it's crazy the amount of people who I communicate with on social media that I actually have whole conversations with and I meet up with in person. And we really get to the nitty gritty of what is needed and wanted by the trades community. And we develop products in that particular way. And that just goes way, way back to back when I was coming up, when I was younger and I was in the music industry. I was an aspiring rapper at one point in time and actually did pretty good for myself. I made a little bit of money, you know what I mean? Like, rap money is good.
It's the government can't find it. Hose everyone cares about in rap.
I don't care about the hose, man.
So I did a similar sort of thing. So before I joined uni, like, I was working for Warner Music in London. So my background was coming from the music business side. I mean, trust me, I was never a rapper and never had any hose.
I was going to say, you've done the hair like Eminem. Are you going to bust out a bit of
rap
god?
I'm a cheap Eminem, I am. But how do you go then going from that to then sort of ending up where you are? And how do you feel that, you know, the stuff that you did before maybe benefited you when you are doing stuff now? Because one thing that I find from the music business was, I learned how to promote something. I learned how to make something seem maybe better than it is sometimes. Not saying that our products aren't as good as what I proclaim to be, but it really helped with that and sort of talking to different people, being able to sort of converse with different people from different backgrounds. That's one thing that I sort of learned from there. So, you know, tell us how you think maybe those two.
So, I mean, first and foremost, I was part of the independent grind, you know, sort of the independent hip hop movement. So coming up, it was all DIY, do it yourself, man. We record our, write our own songs, record our own albums, you know, produce our own beats. We hit the streets. We, you know, flyers, stickers, you know, handing out CDs. We touched it. We used to have a saying that for every person we see at the show, we should have touched the hand of at least one out of every three, like physically touched the hand. You know what I mean? So I come from that street grind, that DIY grind. And there's something really, really special about that, because you are in touch with the people, as opposed to, you know, sometimes a lot of major label artists and stuff like that, they're just in the studio. They have other people, you know, promoting them out in the streets or whatever. Well, we were really out there. And so it was all, oftentimes we would do shows like, you know, these 700,000 people out in the show, and we could look out into the audience and we recognized the face of, you know, over half of the people because we had met them physically. And so just sort of learning that way of grinding, that way of promotion, that grassroots campaigning, that grassroots of building a following, is something that I took to Diamondback. Because what I really noticed early on in getting involved, and we can get back to the story about how I got involved in Diamondback, but what I noticed early on was that a lot of the companies that were serving the construction industry had been really long established. They had been in the game for a really, really long time, and they didn't feel the need to particularly reach back and connect to the actual tradesperson in the trades. They've probably been producing the same product or a variation of the same product for 25 years, and it's been successful. I even saw it with the sales forces that were outselling products. So you had a lot of guys, and no disrespect to dudes who have been grinding on something for 20, 25 years, but you meet a lot of these salesmen, they're writing the same sales orders every month. You know, they're not actually researching what's new and inventive that's out there. It's just become sort of like a habitual thing, and there's no sort of innovation or figuring out what can be done better. And so just coming from that, first of all, the world of hip hop, where you got to be new constantly, you know, because the attention span of, you know, your listener is like 6 months, and bringing that in the independent grind to this tool belt world, in this construction trades world, has just been really refreshing for a lot of people, because they're like, hey, first of all, you care about us, you want to touch where we are, and then B, you want to continue to innovate and not just do the same old thing over and over again. Mm.
We recently went to a trade show and we were trying to talk to these companies, some really big companies, and it was painful trying to get them to talk about their product with any kind of passion. No, it was like you say, a sales team. They didn't really know about the products. They didn't know what was new. They just weren't passionate about
this,
it.
This is some really, really, like, if we were to name and shame some of these, they are the biggest in the business. Like, one of the reasons I wanted to get you on specifically was I watch your videos. Who's the other guy that you run, who runs Diamond?
Oh, Connor. Yes, yeah, the CEO, yeah. Connor.
I watch videos of both of you, and when you're talking about something, you're talking about as if you're explaining it to one of your friends, you know, like you really break it down, it's easy to understand. And that's something that I've tried to do with Unilight as a brand, is I realized that every single person's super important to us, and I should never take anybody for granted. So I try to anybody that I speak to, I talk to as if I'm talking to, you know, one of my friends in the street. And that's something that really comes across from that. So when we went to that trade show last week, we were really shocked that there's so many brands still that just, they don't know how to communicate that message.
No, they don't. They don't. And there's a lot of nepotism in the game as well. You know, so you've got, you know, longstanding people in the business who are hiring relatives or friends because, you know, the job is there, not necessarily because they're the best for the job. You know what I mean? So, and because of that, you know, people are just doing a job. And when people are just doing a job, like you said, there's a lack of passion for it. You know, we truly believe in what we're doing. We got into, when I first started working with Connor in regards to the Diamondback tool belts, it was really evident that he cared about tradespeople. His father was a tradesman. He grew up on job sites his entire life. And I remember him telling me a story of just being on job sites with his dad, and his dad employing dudes, and just people working for his dad that were just like, they're sort of miserable. You know what I mean? Like, you know, their bodies are breaking down. They feel like they're just doing the trades because that's all the only choice that they have. There wasn't a ton of passion for it. And when he came to me, he was like, that's not the kind of trades culture that I want to foster. I want to foster the trade culture of the people that I've met out there who treat their craft like an art, that want to continue to get better with it, that are proud that they're out there. And also, we want those people that maybe don't feel proud of being tradespeople to know that it's okay. This is something that we say here all the time, is that our influencers, our users are superheroes. And coming back to this again, like, we truly believe that. As much as the rapper gets the camera shot where the camera is down low and looks up and the person looks larger than life walking through the video and whatever, like, why can't the tradesperson be presented in the exact same way? Why do we have to get stuck in the same old image of the tradesperson who's just gritty, face is mad, the belt is tied around their waist, their back is broken, their pants are falling down, you can see their ass crack. Can I curse here?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, that's such an old and played out, you know, narrative, you know, and there's something more there. So first and foremost, we just wanted to big up the people in the trades, show them that they are just as valuable and just as special as other people who may be looked at in, you know, a more glorious fashion.
Yeah. Because I mean, my next sort of thing to bring up with you is, obviously, that to me resonates massively, and us as a business, we've used a similar sort of strategy and grown pretty quick. But am I right in thinking that I saw an article on you guys being one of the fastest growing businesses in the US now? Is that correct?
Yeah. So the Mid-Atlantic region, which is a large region, so that's from Delaware all the way down to South Carolina, which is probably the size of the most of Middle Europe, right? So because America is so big. But yeah, we were ranked out of like 500 companies, the 13th fastest growing company there. But what makes that special is if you look at those 500 companies, almost all of them are tech or military and defense companies. Almost like 90% of them, right? So for us to be doing something that's steeped in textile manufacturing and to be able to make that list, I think it's pretty special.
Yeah. I mean, was that a conscious decision by you guys then to manufacture in the US? Was it something, because I mean, one thing I'll say probably about Americans is they're very much more, you know, if it's made in America, they'll support it. You know, in England, yeah, obviously, I think manufacturing sort of died or isn't as big because there wasn't that sort of affinity to made in the UK.
They're very patriotic, aren't they? So if it's America made, it's a big thing. If you can put America made on your product, it's huge out there.
So was that a conscious decision by you guys? And was it something where, you know, yourself and Connor were looking at it and thinking, well, you know, we want to imply Americans, we want to keep everything here? Because I mean, you know, we manufacture in the Far East and it's pretty difficult at times, obviously, especially now trying to get stuff in. You know, was that a conscious decision by you guys that you wanted to put your own stamp on it and set that out from the start, that this is what we're all about?
Definitely in the outset of things, like we grew our manufacturing domestically. We started with one location in North Carolina and branched out to a couple of locations in Wisconsin. And it was really important to us that we were employing US workers. It just because, for a number of reasons. One is because growth and change starts at home, right? So you hear a lot of people, you know, they complain about this and complain about that and they do nothing about it, right? So we wanted to not be the ones that talked and not lived it, right? So we definitely wanted to do that. But also at the size of our company at the time, it didn't make sense for us to push all of our manufacturing overseas. We were innovating constantly. Like every week we were coming up with something new, making changes. And so to have the domestic manufacturing gave us the flexibility to create prototypes, have them made, sent to us really quickly, do limited runs very fast and stuff like that. So it was mutually beneficial. There was a lot of that played into us making the decision there. And you're right, there is a lot of sort of patriotism, affinity for made in America products in the United States, especially with the trade unions and stuff like that. So I think it was always just the right decision to make for us. You know, it was beneficial on so many levels. It was kind of like, we're going to do it this way. You know what I mean? Now, we are diversifying what we're doing now. So we're not just tool belts anymore. We're moving into a whole bunch of other things. We're moving into work apparel and hard goods and stuff like that. And there's a lot of considerations that have to be made as you diversify where you're going to get things done. You know what I mean? So we're in that process right now, determining what's going to be the best. Because at the end of the day, you know, we believe that people want the best product regardless of where it's made, right? If it's made in the USA, that's a bonus, right? But it's got to be we stand for the best. And so we're going to source materials from somewhere else because we just can't get that particular material made in the United States. There's like no one that does it. For instance, when we're working on our new work apparel line, we're messing with some crazy groundbreaking materials, man. Like we're doing these Dyneema weaves, and Dyneema is like used in like motorcycle jackets and motorcycle pants. Like it literally stops bullets, right? So you could take this and like weave it into nylon and spandex or whatever. There's like three places in the entire world that can do these weaves, you know? So are we going to say, well, because we want to make our pants in America, that we're not going to use this super cutting edge material that is going to benefit the tradesman more than say like a denim or like 1,000 denier nylon? No. We have to make the decision always for the best quality at the end of the day, because the customer is the most important.
Yeah. I mean, I think obviously because you've started with Made in America, if, for instance, you didn't get one thing or something made there, I think people would still support you more because you've talked the talk already. You've shown that obviously you're still committed to manufacturing in the US. I mean, obviously, you mentioned some of the new products there. I mean, for anybody listening or watching, is there a time frame for any of these new products? Is there?
Yeah. We're hoping to have the first pants probably in the next couple of months. So we're going to do three tiers of pants. There's going to be the Break the Bank pant, the Get Your Wife a Cheaper Anniversary Present pant, and then the Everyday pant, right? So we're hoping to launch those in a couple of months on a limited run, and then ramp up production as they gain more popularity. We're really confident in the product, and we think it's going to be extremely popular.
Was it a big decision to move away from the tool belts to the apparel? Because I know, just talking about trousers, there's so many different sizes. There's short leg, standard leg, long leg. You got all the waist sizes. It's a big commitment.
Yeah. It's kind of like the two things that in my mind that you don't ever want to start making are like clothes and shoes.
Shoes. Right? I was about to say shoes. Yeah. Because there's so many sizes.
Yeah. Because you can't please anybody, you know, like. There's a store called here in the United States called DSW, Discount Shoe Warehouse, and it's this massive store. I mean, like it's like a soccer field big, and you go in there, there's like thousands of pairs of shoes, and I go in there with my wife, and she's like, I can't find anything. You know what I mean?
You're not looking hard enough. I'll meet you back here in 3 hours. That's what you want to say to me.
Right. So, you know, the shoe world is really, really difficult. And apparel sort of works the same way in terms of we discovered that early on when we did the 701 vest. And so that's been an extremely popular product. And it's a work vest, a light nylon work vest that fits really snugly around your torso and distributes all the tools that you carry, the weight around your torso, as opposed to your shoulders and your hips. And as we were designing that, it went through multiple iterations, because even for something that has open sides and just shoulder straps, getting the cut so specific that it worked for more people that it didn't work for was so hard. And, you know, and that's a vest. And that's not, you know, taking into account that you've got a, you know, for pants, you've got the belt, you've got the hemline, you've got the crotch, you've got the knee, you've got the ankle. And everyone's going to be like, oh, I love these from the ankle to the knee. But as soon as it gets to my taint, I hate it. You know what I mean? Like, it's really difficult.
Yeah, it's a difficult.
We'll figure it out, though.
Yeah, good luck with it, because that's one thing that I look at and think, there's no way I could do trousers or shoes really scare me. We do like a gilet sort of jacket and like a body warmer, and we do like hoodies and stuff like that. But they seem to be a lot easier to tailor to people than trousers. I mean, is there anything else then that you're sort of moving into the apparel side? I know you do some tool bags, tool pouches as well. I mean, is there anything else that you're sort of looking at that you think that you can improve? Because I mean, I always...
Yeah, we're looking at the hard hat, man.
Ah, okay. That's to be honest, that's another thing where, you know, you get some people who prefer a short peak, one with the all-around brim, and then, you know, there's so many variations on that as well. So, you know, if you...
Well, we've got our apparel designer is originally from Under Armour, and she's amazing. So she's going to handle all that stuff. And our hard hat designer is like... It's almost weird to say his resume because it's almost unbelievable. And I don't know how Connor, let me talk about Connor, the CEO of Diamondback. He has a gift for finding talent. I sometimes walk around our offices here and I'm like, dang, I'm like the stupidest person in the room, right? That's kind of a really good feeling though, to know that there's so many intelligent and creative people around you. And so he found this guy for the hard hats who he originally was designing for Lucasfilms and Star Wars. So like in the second trilogies, he designed like a lot of the helmets that they, you know, they wear in the, you know, the X-Wing fighters and stuff like that. And he built the models for those. So like, and then he went on to design, I believe it was helmets for Trek bicycles and do all that stuff like that. And I think I could be speaking out of turn. I believe he also worked with the new NFL safety helmets for football or whatever. So this dude is like this crazy, he has this crazy sci-fi vision with this amazing practical application background as well. So we brought him in here. Dude he's great. He's a nut job. He's hilarious. I'm totally a geek. So we got along too. Cause I'm like, yo, what's, you know, why did you guys go with Jar Jar Binks? Like, no one likes that. And he's like, I know, you know what I mean? So like, we were able to have those conversations, but bringing him in here to just study the hard hat and really figure out a way to truly improve it. Because there are some companies that have been doing a good job in innovating in hard hat design. But what we're trying to do is take the best of the innovation and also not move so far away from some of the traditional looks of the hard hat. Cause some of the more innovative hard hats are like, you know, you walk in the job site and they think you're going to join the Tour de France, right? You know what I mean? It's kind of weird, you know what I mean? So we want to sort of find that, hey, can I be comfortable? Can I be safe? But can I also still look like a tradesperson, whatever that means?
Yeah. No, that's good. I mean,
take us back then. So how do you go from an aspiring rap artist to doing what you do today, and why did you make the change?
If you would have asked me 15, 20 years ago, and myself selling tool belts, I probably would have laughed in your face and we wouldn't have been friends anymore. the winding road was really, really crazy. I sort of went from being an artist and a self-manager. I got into recording and mixing and mastering albums. And I was doing that for a really long time, which led me to education, because I had learned so much about the music industry that I wrote a contemporary music education program and actually sold it to local area high schools. And they started busing kids to me to learn contemporary music education, like beat production, songwriting, you know, recording, mixing, and all stuff like that. And I did that for a number of years, building these sort of curriculums, traveling from schools to schools and lecturing and stuff like that. And then I sort of had this really low period in my life. A couple of things happened. I won't get into the whole dark side of Damani, but like I was just like feeling really down about where I was going to go with my life. And I sort of went basically into hiding. I just stayed at home for like 2 years. I, you know, collected some checks that were sitting out there. And I totally turned off all social media, all emails, everything. The only people I was talking to were my close friends that came to stop by my home. And then one day something just told me, like, open up your email, see what's there. And there was this random email from Connor, and we're in the same group email list for a pickup soccer game that we've been playing for the last almost 20 years, right? And so he sent an email to the group, the listserv for the pickup soccer game, saying, hey, I bought this company, I need a little help packing boxes over the winter or whatever for the holiday season. And for whatever reason, I hadn't even talked to Connor in like 2 years. I just hit him up and was like, yeah, I'm not doing anything. I'm trying to make a little extra money. You know what I mean? I'll come through, pack some boxes for you because I'd rather make a few dollars here than be sitting on my butt. And he and I just got to talking. And the next thing you know, we're just like the fireworks were just going. He was like, well, we could do this. Blah, blah. He only had the company for 4 months. Right. And he was like working it out of a closet in his lawyer, in his law office. He's like, yo, and I'm like, well, dude, you could do this. And we're just next, you know, 2 hours on the phone later, we've brainstormed all these things. And he's like, why don't you just come in? And so I did. I came in, I packed boxes, learned about the product for 6 months. And then he was like, yo, you trying to really do this thing? I'm like, yeah, let's take a shot at it. And that's kind of how I got in the tool belts. And it was like Connor was there to help pull me out. I needed a new thing, you know? And what I realized was that I love this. Like all the things that I had done before, the street team marketing, the educational side of things, like the writing that I had done, like, it all played into this bigger picture Diamondback growth scenario. And every single tool and skill that I learned along the way helped us here. I mean, down to making music videos, bro. Like, let me tell you, I fashioned myself somewhat of a rap music video director for a little while. And then all of a sudden, Connor was like, hey, man, you should do videos for YouTube and Instagram. And I'm like, you know what I mean? Like, so it was just a lot of fun. So I'm kind of to answer your question specifically, I feel as if there are so many, I'm a holistic person, right? There's so many threads that connect everything. And if you could just find those threads, right, then you can make sense of just about anything. Growth is growth. Good growth and positive growth happens the same way. I don't care what field you're in, if it's music, medicine, tool belts, whatever. And then there's just shitty tactics that don't work for anybody.
Well, like you were saying earlier about you're a big Marvel fan. If you, I can't remember what film it is, probably The Last Avengers, where they're looking at all the different timelines, how they're going to stop Thanos. You, at that one point in your timeline, you opened your emails, but if you hadn't, you know, who knows where you could have gone. Yeah. So sometimes things just happen for a reason, don't they?
I'm one of these people. Like I'm not massive on sort of superstitious sort of stuff, but you know, why did you open your computer on that day? That's what you got to think about. And that's sort of, you know, to look, how many years have you been working Diamondback now?
About 5 now. Yeah.
So it's, you know, always amazes me when you ask people, and this is why we like to do this show, to find, you know, those little snippets where people probably watch you all the time on social media, but then don't just realize that without that one little lift up the computer, you wouldn't even be talking to them or educating them about a product.
And here's the crazy part about it. I hadn't opened my email probably about 2 years. And this is coming from a guy who was like very popular in the music industry. I was running all these programs. So when I opened my email, I had all these unread messages. Why that was the one that I opened is even crazier to me. Because I wasn't just going through opening messages. I remember the thought that I had. I was like, why is Connor emailing the soccer listserv? I thought that, and I just went boop. So I can't call it.
And it just shows that you obviously going from being a rap artist, music, video producer, all that stuff to what you're doing now is completely different. And people watching this especially in the UK, a lot of people change careers later on in life to a trade. I don't know why, because I've not personally done that. I started, but it just shows you that it's never too late to change, and you can have an amazing career doing something completely different. In fact, we have an award. It's called Heating Installer of the Year, but basically the best heating engineer or plumber in the country. And the guy who won it this last year came into our industry later in life, so changed career completely. So it just goes to show you that if you're watching this and you're thinking of changing your career, maybe that would be your inspiration.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you talked about, we talk about certain things and we don't have to really get into it, sort of the dark Damani that you talked about. Obviously we always talk, you know, Pete had a break from social media a couple of weeks ago. But it's just, again, I just want to sort of highlight to people that might be listening or watching this that, yeah, you can change at any time. You know, life's not going to pass you by if you suddenly decide at 30 or 40 to change. But also that, you know, you've now found something that you're super passionate about and it's completely changed for you. I mean, do you think then that little period as well, just before where things maybe weren't going so well, do you think that's made you a bit more humble and understanding to the end user, to the customer, to what their needs are? Because, you know, sometimes as well, these people could be going through a similar situation to that, you know, especially with COVID, they're overworked, they're tired, they're busy. You know, what is it that you think as well, that you and Connor, that little combination as well, that when you've come together, that just really sort of connects and resonates with the people that are supporting you as a business?
Yeah, that makes me think of a couple of things. One is, when I was in that dark period, I'd spoken to my mom on the phone, and I was pretty much just done with everything. And because one of my passions that I was really into at the time had been sort of wrestled away from me, taken from me, against my will. And my mom said to me, you know, life doesn't close a door without opening another one. And there's a door open for you, Damani. You're just not looking for it. Right. And so, that was a big wake up moment for me, because I was so stuck in my past mentality, like sort of the nostalgia of what could have been. If had this not been taken from me, I could be doing this, blah, 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 blah. And like that sort of thought is extremely defeating. Right. And so what I realized what I was not doing, and thanks to my mom, and, you know, she planted the seed, was that I had to stop thinking about what could have been and start thinking about what I could do. Right. And that's when things started to open up. That's when I opened up my email. You know what I mean? That's when I got in contact with Connor. And then Connor and I, just sort of sitting together, we sort of realized a couple of things about each other, was that we had a similar passion for doing the right thing for people. Like we share a sort of same morals and ethics, right? Like I don't believe in screwing people over. I don't believe, you know, all those little things. And like in the business world, as sad as it is to say this, that's not common, right? Like the bottom line, the penny, the cent, the dollar is more important than treating someone well. Right. So we shared that similar interest. And then over time, we realized that we're very complementary characters. Connor's a little less public than I am, like personable. Like I can just get out and just talk to people all day. Connor is like the ADHD, right? Like he comes up with an idea, is like, this is an idea. Oh, like run with it. Bam. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, Alex.
And he's like, you know, like comes in the office, he's like, do this.
Has he got ADHD? Leaves.
Was that?
Has he got ADHD?
I mean, I don't know if it's been diagnosed, but like I've diagnosed him with that. Like
I've got ADHD. So it sounds familiar, to be honest.
Right. And he's constantly come up with new ideas. He's constantly just looking at something and just being totally inspired and being able to, you know, like, we should do this and change this and blah, 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 blah. And then he'll sort of like, it trickles down the line. And what I've been able to do is hear what he's saying and being like, okay, how do I make this idea come to life for him? How do I make it come to life for Diamondback? How do I then explain this product to the public? How do I visually represent it to them? And so that's where my education background, and I'm much more plotting and patient, right? Connor can't stand the word patience, but I will spend weeks, you know, working out the details of an idea that just was like, bam, out of his mind in a moment. And he's on to the next thing. And so the complement of those things, and conversely, I can sort of get bogged down in some of the details of things because I want everything to be so perfect or whatever. And Connor has a way of sort of being like, okay, Damani, that's enough. Let's move on to the next thing, right? You know, it's like, you know, grabbing my hand, little child, and let's go to the next room, you know?
You need a bit of both, so you obviously complement each other. I mean, one last question I was going to say then is, obviously, you talked about coming into the business when it was 4 months old. Obviously, you know, Connor's working out of his home office or wherever it was, and he's, you know, trying to build this brand. You come in, you know, all of a sudden, you two are together. When did you both look at each other? Because I feel there's always a moment where you look at each other and you go, shit, when did this happen? You know, like when it's sort of, you know, you start to notice it and you get really excited, you know, you think, oh, I've hit our first million in sales. And then you're like, you know, and then all of a sudden you realize actually you're really onto something. You know, how long into the business did you both sort of look at each other and go, we're onto something here? When did that sort of, do you think that came into?
Honestly, I'm still waiting for that moment from Connor, man. I'm like, because I'm like a milestone type person. Like I'll send him a text, like early on, I'd send him a text message and be like, hey man, congratulations. We got our, you know, 30,000th order, right? And the response that I get back from Connor was like, it's not enough. You know what I mean? Like he's just, it's just moving forward, constantly moving forward. And he's like, we're not, in his mind, we're not done yet. It's kind of like, you know, and you see this with championship like athletic teams, right? Whether it's basketball, whether it's football, whatever you're playing in a tournament, you can celebrate winning, you know, the third leg of the FA Cup, but the greatest teams are going to be like, hey, high five, and then we're going to train, because what they're trying to do is win the FA Cup. Like the third leg is cool, but we're going for the title. All right, we're going for the Champions League, right? So that's kind of what it's been for us, is like we might give ourselves a quick like, cool, high five, we got the 701 vest out. But the 701 vest is not the ultimate goal here. The goal is total domination. No, I mean like, right?
No, but you say so, that, but it becomes that like siege mentality, isn't it? Where, you know, I use it a bit in here to G everybody up that, you know, it's us against everybody else out there. Don't fight each other in here. You know, it's us against everybody else out there, because you have to sort of beat that mentality into everybody so that everybody's on that boat rowing the same way. You know, so when you say it's total domination, in your head, it actually, you know, that's where you want to be.
It is. It is. Like, and, you know, like, you know, and that's what counts, what's in here. And, you know, people can look at the success that we've had so far. And don't get me wrong, we are extremely grateful for every single sale that we've ever made. Any single person that's ever reposted them rocking themselves a Diamondback, any person that's taken the time out of their day to write a review, we are extremely grateful for those things. And so we appreciate them. But at the end of the day, I'm constantly like, yo, what is the next move? Because I'm thinking about, there's competition out there. There's other companies that want to take us down. There's people ripping off our designs from when we're, you know, doing crowdsourcing our designs on Instagram. And I'm seeing this all over the internet. And I'm thinking, I got to be 10 steps ahead of those. It reminds me, and this will be the last thing I say, I know we got to wrap this up, but I remember watching a documentary one time on the Beatles, and they were talking to John Lennon and about how they were so prolific in putting out music, right? And he said it was actually on accident, because they were watching like Elvis Presley, they were watching like the Beach Boys and everything, and they thought that those people were producing music at such a high level. They didn't understand the process that they were doing. Like Elvis would like go into the studio, record three or four albums in 4 months and then go hit the road for 6 months, right? And so in that time, the 6 months, those other albums are coming out periodically, right? Well, the Beatles thought that everyone was just recording constantly all the time because they were trying to keep up, right? And as a result, we got all this wonderful music from the Beatles because they had a misconception of the industry, right? Like, and so similarly, we are looking at the rest of the industry and like, look at what they're doing. Like, and we're trying to, and we're the Beatles. I probably not as many people in the industry are copying us. Probably not as many people in the industry are trying to do what we're trying to do. But I think that they're all coming for me. I'm like paranoid. I'm like the dude, like, I'm like in a dark room with candles holding like 245s, like looking out the freaking window, like Malcolm X in the picture, you know what I'm saying? Like, and if I don't grow and if we don't go, then it's only a matter of time before we're swallowed by the beast. So, like,
evolve.
That is the motivation.
Evolve.
In the words of House of Pain, I came to win.
I thought you were going to say jump around. one thing I'd go on. You. Asked,
I want to know if he's going to wrap us up.
No, I literally was going to say we need to hear some sick bars. You're going to have to drop some fire like that. We're going to have to like.
Are we going to rap as well?
No, I'm not going to rap. You can rap, but
I'm retired, guys.
No, we need to hear you.
There's one going on. Right, you might have to cut this out, Jack, because this is probably going to be the cringiest thing.
My name's Pete. I'm so street, and no, I wear size 12 on my feet. Is that what you're going to say?
You had Louis Theroux. Theroux. There's a TikTok going around in the minute where he raps. My money don't jiggle, it folds. I like to see you wiggle for sure. Makes me want to dribble, you know, riding in my Fiat. You really got to see it. 6'2" in a compact, no slack, but luckily the seats go back. That's it.
Sign him, dude.
No, I doubt you've ever rapped about a Fiat. No, nobody wants
to. Do you rap God? Go on.
No.
Do rap God? I was done with Eminem post.
You can't be done with the GOAT.
No, like, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, he's a great rapper and some people like the later albums, but the original stuff, like after Slim Shady LP, I sort of like, and was it Curtain Call or whatever it was? What was the...
Curtain Call wasn't a great one, but I like Recovery's a good album.
Recovery was good. Yeah, it was decent.
I'm probably like you. Like, I used to, like, I got into hip hop listening to like Hieroglyphics and J5, all that sort of stuff. So I was like, I loved the sort of, you know, you just slap a beat on and people are just freestyle over the top of it. And then Eminem used to be like that because it was sort of, you know, rapping about just, I killed your cat, dumped it in a bag, whatever it was. He was just angry. And then he sort of obviously got well paid and wasn't so angry.
I read about it, didn't he? He just, like with a lot of people, he took a lot of drugs. He was in a bad place and
his flow just changed. Like back in the day, it was all like dun 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 dun, you know, and then it sort of like was, and he was trying to be like,
that's exactly what it is. It became like really twisted. It became mechanical.
Yeah.
I feel like he lost a little bit of the soul in what he was doing.
Yeah, because at the start, I'm not an expert on Eminem, but he was obviously hungry to get where he got, and then when you get there and people are throwing money at you, you lose the reason why you're there, the fire. Yeah. So then he was just doing it.
He's still a great lyricist, but then for me, like I love like Tupac and Biggie and stuff like that. Just like some really obscure people, even like UK hip hop, which was UK hip hop, not UK grime, as it is now.
But you can relate it to what you guys are doing because at the minute you've got the fire, you want to be at the top. If you become complacent and then someone comes up in the ranks,
that's why he's the siege mentality,
and does what you're doing and then goes past you, you need to get that fire back to get back on top. And that's similar to what happened.
Only one thing I want to add about that though is I have exactly the same mentality as you guys, that everyone's coming for us, and if I don't answer that phone at 4 a.m, then somebody else is more hungry than me and nobody's more hungry. But the only problem is it becomes obsessive to the point where actually it can start to affect you in other ways, because you're just like, so you're trying to get that balance down the middle of it. But anyway, we want to...
My wife made a rule that like I can't look at Instagram and my email on Saturday or Sunday at all. Like, thank God for my wife, because she actually sort of saved me. Like, I was so in it that, I mean, I was working 24/7, and she finally came. She was like, baby, if you want me to be happy in this relationship, and you know what that means, then you need to stop doing this on Saturday and Sunday. And when the first weekend that happened, I was like, where's my crack? You know what I mean? Like, give me my phone. Like, I'm so worried. But after a while, it was just like, yo, I really need this, because after taking that break Saturday and Sunday, I was able to come back Monday, and I was even more refreshed, and I was even more ready to go, and I wasn't worn down, and I wasn't broken. But yo, can we address this Eminem thing real quick? Because I think this is really important. Early on in his career, he had D12 and those guys proof all around him all the time. He had a good crew around him. And so there's something to be said about when you're developing songs and styles and you have your team around you. You're constantly trying to impress your homie who influenced you or whatever, or they're your good friends, so they could tell you, dude, that sucks. Don't say that chorus, whatever. And like, or you hear something that they did because you respect what they're doing, and you take a piece of it, and it gets sort of like added into what you're doing and gives you a new flavor. What happens with a lot of artists is that they get more money, they get more insulated. They're not around the people that inspired them and kept them honest in their music. And so what you see is the lack of that additional creativity or the checks and balances in their art form, right? And this is like across the board. You see this with artists in every single genre, right? The more money they get, the more it's just them in a studio by themselves with a singular producer with a singular idea. And you're missing all those things that you thought didn't matter, the nuances that were picked up by the crew and the people that actually was what made the music so special and so layered and so deep. And so and that's one of the reasons, and in thinking about how we deal with Diamondback, the Instagram community, the Facebook community, soon to be TikTok community, those are our crew in the studio, right? The minute we separate ourselves from the people, we are on our way to being obsolete. Like, absolutely, right? So we don't want to become insulated, make enough money. We say, oh, Diamondback, we got to figure it out. We're going to become Aerosmith, and we're going to write the same song year after year after year. Like, you know, we're going to become Coldplay, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I like Coldplay. That's not a diss, but they literally have written the same song. I don't want loads of
Coldplay fans piling in
the
comments.
There's not that many, mate. Don't worry.
Yeah. They're like, I like Damani for a second, but he dissed Coldplay. Like, you know, shut it up. No. I like Coldplay, but they have written the same song 4 or 5 times because it's a formula. It's a hit, right? So we don't want to become that, and so we want to stay grounded with the people.
Yeah,
good. If you've got a loyal user base and you do bring out an idea, and it's really valuable for them to say, guys, it's not great, or can you change this, or we don't like this. It helps you as a business, and it also makes people feel like they're part of what you're doing. And that you care about their opinion, which is invaluable.
Yeah. One last thing then, Damani, is we always ask everybody at the end, is there, for like a Jerry Springer style final thought, or is there anything that, you know, you guys are going to be doing, or anything that you want to say to people that might be listening or watching to the show about, you know, Diamondback yourself, you know, just hit us up with like a final thought. For the podcast.
Bit of advice, something inspirational, just whatever you want to say, really.
And then spits and bars.
If you can wrap it,
if you can wrap your final thought.
if you dig deep enough with the Google, you'll be able to find some of my albums that are out there. But
is it on YouTube? Is there any videos of you on YouTube?
Yeah, I got some stuff, man. But you're like, I'm turning 45 right now, so my stuff is like from like 15, 20 years ago. So if you're looking for that trap,
was it all baggy pants and the big oversized coats as well? Was it all?
No, I was super fly. You know, I'm sexy.
Because everybody, the funny thing for me was around about 2002, everybody went real sort of 50 Cent Nelly. You know, massive jackets, big baggy trousers, and the wife beater vest tops as well.
Yeah.
I had to when the clothes got that big, man. I was like, this ain't for me, man. Because like, I got to be able to run and hop over a fence in what I'm wearing. You know. And if I'm going trip, man, like, nah, I can't wear that, yo. But in terms of a final thought, man, really, a final thought about Dimebag is we are who we say we are. Taking back to Rakim and hip hop, and Eminem actually used that line from Rakim as a chorus for one of his songs. I am who I say I am, and if I wasn't, why would I say I am? That's like, that's who you see is who we are. And a lot of companies out here, who they portray is not actually who we are. We are who we are. So that's Dimebag in a nutshell. And my favorite words of inspiration, and please tune into the Dimebag Damani show, always on Instagram, Monday through Friday morning. I do a story there, and it won't be morning for you guys. It'll be the afternoon when it goes up. But I end every show with the same words: be good to yourself. If not, be good to somebody. And that's how I live my life. Try to treat myself with the same respect that I should treat everyone else with. I really appreciate you guys having me on here, man. It's been awesome.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, appreciate it. Awesome. Thanks, Damani.